It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our cannabis Q&A, and I saw Dr. Mitch show up in our chat room, and I'm trying to reach him on Skype, but he's there's Dr. Mitch on Skype. How you doing, Dr. Mitch? Hello, Mitch, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you there. I saw your Skype was offline. I was worried.
Oh, okay.
Glad to have you here. Dr. Mitch is the host of Burning Issues here on CannabisRadio.com, weekly podcast dedicated to enlightening people on the truth about cannabis. And Dr. Mitch, what's coming up on your next show?
Oh, it's curious. I had a really intriguing interview with a libertarian executive vice president of the Cato Institute, David Bowes, and he actually, you know, we had a good time. It was fun.
All right. Check that out on CannabisRadio.com. You can get all the Burning Issues episodes available there for download on demand, and we'll have more. We'll make more of those as we go. But Dr. Mitch joins us every Monday and has for years now to discuss our cannabis Q&A. The phone lines are open. If you've got a question on cannabis science, culture, history, or health, the phone line is 971-533-7111. But as we wait for your calls, we've got a few other stories that we can talk about. And at the top of the list, Dr. Mitch, a very interesting study that was shown up on Medical Daily that claims childhood sexual abuse is linked to marijuana use, but it really may all be in the genes. What can we glean from this study?
So this is actually a neat crew out at WashU who have this big data set of twins down in Australia. And it looks like folks who run into trouble with cannabis, it's probably a heritable contributor as far as that is concerned. But there's usually you inherit some kind of propensity towards a reaction to the drug, and a stressor, a big stressor like child abuse, may be what contributes to, you know, that leap from, you know, experimental use to troubled use. I, you know, didn't want to make too big a deal out of this just because it's a very complicated genetic analysis, and this individual gene may not replicate, but we've seen heritability of cannabis dependence symptoms back when that was the diagnosis, so it wouldn't stun me that there's a heritable contributor.
Okay, so somebody's who's comes from a family where they've got a difficulty with marijuana use, that may be something that leads to their own difficulty with marijuana use, the heritability you're speaking of.
Exactly. And it looks like, actually, not from these data, but from other data sets, what you inherit is often the response to cannabis itself. And so that subset of folks may find it more pleasant or a good way of getting their minds off certain stressors. But it's the combination of that and a stressor like childhood abuse that seems to be what leads to the actual dependence symptoms.
Does that mean that some of those people out there that say when they first smoke they don't get high, maybe that's genetic?
There's certainly a heritability to that initial response, but that not getting high actually seems to be linked to an inability to know how to inhale. It's kind of an intriguing first step.
Well, I did not inhale. I did not like it, and I never tried it again. So,
well done, sir.
Let's take a look at this other study, which this one was interesting because here in Oregon, we've recently gotten these new placards that have to be handed out whenever there's a cannabis purchase at our legal stores that talks about there may be damage to the fetus, there may be problems for pregnant women, maybe you shouldn't smoke pot. And there's always these studies saying this or that bad thing about moms who smoke pot. But this study says that prenatal exposure to marijuana can affect your kid's vision in a good way. Tell folks about this one.
So I was pretty stunned by this, but basically in this rather complicated visual tracking task, the kids who were at age four and were the ones who had moms who had exposure to cannabis during pregnancy were actually doing better on this. It's not a huge effect, but it's definitely something that, you know, was statistically significant. I want to emphasize, as I would if it had gone the other way, that these weren't randomly assigned, and I'm guessing that these were folks who, you know, had mothers who may have been particularly good at comparable tasks. If they had done an adult test of something in the same domain, I would have found this a little more easy to follow. But the other thing is, I'm just sort of spitballing here, but I'm wondering if it may have been something a little like that cannabis protecting against alcohol-induced damages in the brain, that if these were parents who actually were pretty drug-involved, the ones who did alcohol and alcohol alone may have actually done more damage to their kids, whereas the ones who had cannabis on top of the alcohol may have protected against. I'm still really down on drug use during pregnancy, and so I just wanted to emphasize that this isn't exactly a prenatal vitamin.
Yeah, and there's so many different confounders when we try to get any information out of this sort of stuff, because you can't, you know, just randomly assign half the pregnant women to smoke pot. It's all self-selecting and such, and who knows, maybe people that already have these enhanced visual skills are more likely to be people that want to smoke pot, and then their kids inherit those visual skills. Is that kind of something
you got happen? It exactly right, man. That's it. And I think there's some comparable animal work that really needs to be done, where we could do random assignment and just checked. I mean, obviously rats can't do this task, but they do visual spatial tasks, and we could see if that enhancement does replicate that way and have a stronger causality argument.
All right. We have a headline coming out of Time magazine on time.com that says 1 in 10 people in the U.S. have abused drugs. And that's where we have to define, what do we mean by abused and what do we mean by drugs?
So what's crazy about this is one of the hugest face-to-face interviews from a national survey back in 2012. And it's unfortunate because the diagnosis for drug abuse is actually no longer around. The DSM-5 has an addiction syndrome. So I'm apprehensive about making too much of this. But the take-home message that about 10% of folks have had some kind of drug-related problems actually is consistent with data we've had in the past, but that includes cannabis, cocaine, hallucinogens, heroin, the whole gamut. And I think the clincher is we want to, you know, emphasize that, hey, this can happen to anyone despite the heritability and the class differences and things like that we've mentioned, and that the opioid-related things are clearly up. So I could split hairs about the diagnosis of dependence, but just the fact that we've got literally more painkiller abuse than we've ever had is something for everybody to keep in mind. By all means, leave those things alone if you can.
We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, the host of Burning Issues on CannabisRadio.com. And if you got a call in question, the phone line is 971-533-7111. Or if you'd like to email your question in, you can send it to 420research@gmail.com, and we might tackle it in a future show. Another study showing an alarming link between alcohol, drug use, and campus rape. This is, as a professor on a college campus, I'm sure this is a topic you deal with quite a bit.
Well, actually, this is my friend Kate Carey, who used to be at Syracuse University, and she, you know, did a really good job of getting some candid responses. But in a large sample, over 400 freshman women, suggested about 15% had experienced some kind of sexual assault while basically incapacitated by drugs or alcohol. And I feel like the only thing to say about this is, oh my God, this is horrible. And it's time to let intervening be the social norm now. So if you see somebody passed out, get that person somewhere safe, regardless of race, creed, gender, sexual orientation, or whatever. We don't want people to do that. And then let's definitely set the norm that this is completely uncool to, you know, even be trying to kiss somebody who isn't conscious. Like, this is just so wrong in so many ways and just so hostile and reprehensible. And we've had data comparable to this literally for decades, and it says a lot about making better decisions as far as alcohol is concerned. I really feel like when you look at the norms, most folks really do not drink very much at all. Have maybe one or two drinks in an evening, and it's just a outlying crew that happen to drink four or more on any individual occasion, and that seems to be what's putting folks at risk for these assaults.
Yeah, and such a shame that so many colleges, there's some sort of drug testing involved that kind of incentivizes the use of alcohol or these harder drugs rather than marijuana. Is there really much to people that are marijuana alone consumers seeing this increased link with campus rape?
We don't have those data in either direction, but in part, it's hard to get funding to look at that and that alone. And so I'm finding that a little bit suspicious. The other thing, I mean, I want to hammer home the disparate penalties. So if you're caught with an illicit drug of any kind on some campuses, you're expelled. And that's just not the same penalty for alcohol at all, even with underage drinking. So what's potentially a safer drug in this case for numerous reasons, including probably a decreased likelihood simply because who smokes so much pot that they pass out?
Yeah.
Then here we're essentially, you know, setting things up so the contingencies are completely ass backwards.
Yeah. All right. And finally, we've got a story out of Tech Times that very interesting because we've talked about kids and ADHD and Adderall and so forth. And this study said that kids who take ADHD medications like Adderall are more likely to be bullied. And what's behind that?
I'm afraid this is just a mask for actually kids with ADHD are more likely to be bullied. And it's a very sad dynamic. And it's funny because the qualitative work is actually what revealed it most. I thought, oh, these kids will be tough and they'll be quick to anger and probably not be somebody that a bully would want to target. But in fact, when you interview the bullies, what they say is they know the ADHD kid is in trouble a lot and that if they pick on them, odds are high the teacher's not going to believe them. And that just breaks my heart. I was just like, oh my God, what kind of bully basically goes after somebody with that rationale? But that seems to be part of the case. So I don't think this really has anything to do with the ADHD meds so much as this odd dance between the bullies and the bullied that ADHD tends to put folks at risk for.
Wasn't there something in there about being bullied to sell or give away their meds, though?
Oh, it's interesting because at the end of the article, she does say that at Valari. Yeah. Oh, what a bummer, man. So, it just, not only are you more likely to get in trouble, but hey, I want your drugs.
It's the new twist on the old, hey, kid, give me your lunch money.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. Well, folks, check out Dr. Mitch on the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. You can also reach him by email at 420research@gmail.com. And we'll speak to you next Monday. Thanks, Dr. Mitch.
Okay, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. When we come back, an amazing oratory from Deborah Peterson-Small, co-founder of Break the Chains, on the need for drug war reparations and the insanity of baseball metaphors for criminal justice. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.